Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Saving money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Menards has a huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, including pouring a walkway, setting a post, or even installing stone veneer. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome, Red Sox fans. Here are the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, everyone, for another edition of Red Sox Deep Dives. This episode is going to be almost entirely about the Red Sox bullpen. There's plenty to get into as far as moves that could be made. Could we see different alignments in the coming days and weeks? Back with me for this episode, Andrew Dwan, Joe Goddard. Are you guys ready?
More ready than half the bullpen is. Let's go.
My favorite episode of the week. Let's do it.
So, Barnes blew in game one his fourth game in the last, couple series, something like that. One of them wasn't a save situation previously. Fourth in his last 15. Okay. And so his metrics are sliding. They're dropping compared to the first half. How safe is his job in the ninth inning?
I think it's 100% safe at this point. I don't see anyone that's going to slide into it. It's not like they traded, Craig Kimbrell or anyone, So I can't see anyone that would be willing just like to hop in and take the reins at this point. It's not like Ottavino slipped a little bit too, so he's not breathing down his neck. I think it's Barnes or bust.
I think it's very safe, unfortunately, because I think he started to slip when he signed a contract extension. And I think the numbers show that when someone's breathing down these guys' necks, their competitive fire takes them to another level, as does a contract year. So as much as I think we got Barnes for two more years at a good price tag, he's starting to slip a little bit, and I wonder if there's no coincidence there.
Well, his usage is definitely up too. I mean, he's already appeared in 48 games, 46 innings, career high is 69 innings, and with 50 games left, ideally he's going to have to go past that. It would only take 23 appearances to clean appearances to match it. I think they definitely relied on him a lot. I think that's how they got off to as good of a first half as they did, where they pushed guys to maybe their limit, and it's coming back a little bit. Matt Barnes pitching the All-Star game. Pitched like 40 pitches, by the way. I was a little drunk at the game, and I was yelling at Kevin Cash. I was a little angry. So, I don't know. That didn't help him.
Cash probably wanted to make sure he had his Tommy John surgery scheduled right by the end of the week. But I'm not ready to say that they're going to take him out of that role, but I'm pretty concerned right now because his curveball does not have the bite that it had pre-sticky stuff being banned. And you look at that outing against Tampa, he's afraid to attack the zone. I mean, that was the big change. He was attacking the zone because they couldn't hit it. You know, he had enough spin and whatever. And when you look at that outing in game one, he was trying to attack the edges of the zone and the corners and whatnot, and he wasn't able to locate. And he walked a couple of guys. And I think the book is out on him. I think the better teams in the American League, luckily we won't be facing many of them for a little while, but and we won't be facing Toronto again, thank God. But I think he's going to struggle. And I think the Red Sox are going to learn the hard way that he's probably not a closer in the post-sticky stuff era. It worked out great for a couple of months, like everyone else on this team, but
I think he's a closer.
No, and I know Lou Maloney threw a tweet out there with all of his pre and post crackdown numbers, and there was no difference in spin rate. I think he's just been afraid to attack guys. I think there's been a downtick in velocity a little bit, and the Matt Barnes we saw were like, who the heck is this? He was pumping strike one every single batter. And it was just like, this is amazing. This is refreshing. This is a guy we haven't seen before. And we're not getting that right now.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. The big part to me is not velocity. It's confidence. He seems to have lost a little bit of confidence in his fastball. And he's a little bit too reliant on that great curveball that he has, which I love. When Matt Barnes is going, the curveball gets swings and misses at an exorbitant rate, especially late in counts when you can use it as kind of a waste pitch. The curveball as the first pitch diminishes a whole at bat. If you attack a guy with a curveball with the first pitch, then he's seen it. And then when it comes to getting maybe two strikes on a hitter, he's sitting there, he's waiting on the curveball. He's going to do more damage with it. And when Barnes has gotten into trouble in the past, not even just this year, it's because he throws too many pitches outside the zone, walks too many guys, or he grooves one because he's behind in the count. If he can pump strike one in there at 97 the way he was doing in the first half, he's going to be fine. If he pumps 95 in there, he's going to be fine. But if he's worried about pumping 95 and therefore is only throwing the curveball as the first pitch, he's going to struggle. And this bullpen doesn't have right now another guy who's fresh who can step up. We're going to live and die by Matt Barnes. Matt Barnes was not good, admittedly, in the last couple of appearances. Terry, Andrew, do you guys know what Matt Barnes' numbers are when he has one day of rest?
They're probably not great.
When he has no rest, his ERA is a little bit higher than 4. When he has one day of rest, his ERA drops 2.5 runs. So when you threw him out there against Toronto, I'm going to use Toronto because that was the most recent real implosion that was Matt Barnes' fault, in my opinion. You knew he had no rest. He had very few bullets in the tank, and he left an absolute hanger to George Springer. And then in this Tampa series, he was picking around the edge of the zone with the curveball, and the only time he threw a fastball was absolutely crushed because it was a 2-1 count. The hitter is looking fastball middle in. He got fastball middle in, and whether you're Chapman or Barnes or Pedro or Clemens, if they know what pitch is coming, unless you're Mariano Rivera, big league hitters can hit it. So he needs to just be a little bit better at controlling the strike zone early in the count, getting ahead so he can use that devastating curveball to his advantage instead of to his disadvantage.
His curveball, to me, doesn't seem to have the same bite that it did have previously. So whether you can attribute that to spin rate or whatever, maybe it's still a general issue of grip on the ball. I don't know. His strikeout percentage before July was 49%. He struck out 49% of the batters he faced. That was a 15-point whatever strikeout per nine, which is insanely high. It was probably top three or four in the league, excuse me, if not higher. Since July, it's gone from the start of July, it's gone from 49%, excuse me, 45% all the way down to 29%. So that's a significant drop. His walk rate also went from 7% to now 11% since July. And his strikeout per nine now after July 1st is 10 something. So it's a noticeable decline. And I think there's a good chance we're going to lose some games. We're going to lose some games because of Matt Barnes. And then we're going to be asking the question when it might be a little bit too late. And I get it. There's no ideal replacement for Matt Barnes. There isn't. It doesn't exist. You could give it to Ottavino, but he's been scuffling.
Josh Taylor.
Well, Taylor, good point. You could make a case. You could make a case.
Has he been – he's been he's a little up his right game.
I'm not saying he's been lights out. He wasn't even that great today. He hasn't been that great for the last couple of weeks because of high usage.
I mean, his last 15 games, he's got a 1.59 whip with a ERA about 4.
Yeah, not great. Not great. His numbers have been bad. Everyone's been bad. So I'm going to just kinda take the last couple weeks with a grain of salt. Go ahead, Andrew.
Sorry, I was just going to say, are we having this discussion if Whitlock didn't have his worst game of the year? I think it was just one of those, like, everything just all the proverbial crap hit the fan at the same time.
Ryan's like, oh, he's the best pitcher.
Love it. They love doing that. They love it. Yeah, if Eck and Obi could just, like, jinx guys all days, They probably wouldn't even ask to get paid. They'd be like, I'll pay you. This is my life's passion.
Yeah.
It was just absurd.
It was brutal.
The interesting thing about the Whitlock appearance, which was also in game one, was that after the first inning, because he scuffled, he got five outs total. So when he was trying to get those first two outs in, I want to say it was the sixth inning, he was fastball heavy, and Xander Bogaerts actually approached him and said, hey, they're sitting on your fastballs right now. You got to start mixing it up. And then he came out for the second inning and was lights out that second inning. Unfortunately, the damage had already been done. Two runs had been given up. One of them, in the last episode, we talked about JD making essentially an error. He probably didn't get charged for it, but threw the ball to third, which allowed the runner from first to go to second, two runners in scoring position. So that was unfortunate for Whitlock, but I'll say this. Barnes was off. He was going to be off regardless. Maybe he's not quite as nervous. I don't know, but he was behind in every count, in every batter he faced, including Nelson
Cruz. That's the key.
If you watch it, though, he started every single hitter with a curveball. They were all first pitch balls.
He's nibbling.
He's manic. He's not going after hitters.
No, that's the thing. I don't see a downtick in stuff. I see an uptick in nibbling, and that's a confidence thing. And I think we saw that with JD in the dugout after the end of the game.
Yeah, he was trying to be too perfect.
Yeah, and you can't. It's like aiming your putt too hard. You're not good.
This entire team is doing it. They're all pressing to be perfect, to be the one that snaps the team out of the slump, and it's causing them to either hang a breaking ball because they're thinking about the next pitch or the runner on second in some cases, like with Springer, or to nibble at the outside corner three straight pitches when you're clearly not getting it and you give up a walk after being up 0-2. It's just not the way to win ball games long term. And it's not just Barnes. Everybody on the roster has been doing it. If we want to talk about the rest of the bullpen in this episode, I mean, there are three guys in the bullpen that on any given night I feel like give us a good chance to win. And then the rest of the guys, it's kind of just average. Just bridge the gap.
Should we go there right now? I mean,
yeah, I mean, Salamora looks great and has the potential to be a bona fide eighth inning guy, but every third or fourth time out gets rocked. He's prone to the long ball.
Well, so
and it's his first year, which is tough.
First year with a new ball, right?
Yep.
My thing with Salamora is his out pitch, the splitter. He doesn't throw for a strike ever. So on days where they're not swinging at it, he gets himself into trouble.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Right? And that's not his own, that's not necessarily his fault so much. But if he doesn't pump the gas in at 97 and get strikes with it, if he's not controlling the fastball, they're just not going to swing. So that's kind of where he gets himself into trouble. Is he throws the fastball for balls, and then he goes to the splitter, and they just lay off it.
Can we title this episode the Darwinzen appreciation thread? Because you don't appreciate him as much until he's gone. And, you know, we're noticing it so hard. Yeah, it's like Mr. Toad's wild ride when he's out there. But more often than not, he's been, acceptably passable.
Much better than the other guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, he's kind of in the same rhythm as Salamora, I feel like. Every third or fourth time out, he just loses it. So,
but where's it going?
This is a guy like Robles, right? Robles, it's like every other time he loses it.
Yeah.
So you really appreciate the difference.
I want to see Robles just load up on spider tech, because I think if he could get a grip, he'd be an amazing pitcher. And just do it till he get caught. Because he's got a filthy fastball. Just load up, dude. Who gives a shit?
Do it
until
he gets caught and then DFA him. Be like, yeah. Sorry, this guy sucks.
We tried.
Ryan Brazier could probably, I wouldn't be shocked to see him at some point in this Orioles series.
Have you guys looked up his numbers at all? Because I actually meant to do that earlier, and I did not. But I do know he pitched last night. I'm going to try to grab these right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're still going to take
I'm going to be honest. I have many of his stats, but I have one of them right in front of me right now.
From his rehab?
I'm going to just go with the stats. Of
I was just curious about his rehab.
Okay, I was going to say, at his peak, 34 appearances, 6 earned runs, 29 strikeouts, an 0.77 whip for a 1.6 ERA in 2018. We're not going to get that guy. We're not going to get that guy. But can we get the guy with a 1.3 whip from 2020? Hell yeah, we can. So that's going to change a lot of things about this bullpen. I mean, that's one more guy you can give the ball to in the 6th, 7th, 8th inning. That's probably not going to go out there every other time and give it away.
And Brazier threw a clean inning in his first outing, so I don't know how his second outing went.
Can't be worse, right? I mean, it's a trustworthy arm, and we know Cora would love to go to the well with him. So,
And he would be a fresh arm, right?
Yeah.
So that's mostly what it is.
I'm looking forward to him.
No fresh arms. We have no bullets left in Matt Barnes' arm right now with 50 games to go. Ottavino does not look like the Ottavino that we saw in the first half. Josh Taylor has been thrown out there so often that they're learning to hit the slider. And he was going to come back down to earth, no doubt. I mean, he was the best pitcher in baseball for the first 5 months. You can't expect that to stick.
And with Brazier, last season, he was a bona fide setup man in the eighth inning. So,
he was great.
He can.
And so if you can pair him into that three-man trust, circle of trust, and you add Brazier to give Ottavino a day off here, a day off there, and then Josh Taylor doesn't have to work in the sixth inning if Darlington Hernandez comes back healthy every single time. Mm-hmm. We're gonna be in good shape. And
yeah, it's two good arms.
You also have guys in the pen who I think overlooking that Martin Perez in the pen can be the long guy. Why is Yaxel Rios in there? Like, why? He's pitching every day when the games are close. 4-1 game today, and you put in Yaxel Rios. 4-1 in the fifth inning. It's not over yet.
Right? I have a theory on that. I think honestly, he probably wanted to put in Richards, but didn't want the crowd reaction and didn't want like a giant momentum swing to come in with just a swoon of negativity coming over the city when oh, we got action in right field. I had walked away and I could hear the game. It's like, we got action in the bullpen. I was like, oh my God, I kind of hope it's Richards. I was like,
I wanted to see Richards.
That's gonna like throw everyone into a panic. And it wasn't, and it should have. I mean, at this point,
well, so matter, I look at it this way, and Terry, maybe you look at it differently, and Andrew, you as well. Every time I see Yaxel Rios, it's like Cora's waving the white flag on that game. If we win that game, it's gravy. But every time I see Yaxel Rios, it's like Curtis Laskanik in 04. It's like every time he's out there, you lose. And it's not even necessarily his fault. I just feel like you put him into situations where the team is already behind and he doesn't quite get you three outs without giving up one or two runs at least. And so, you know, a 4-1 game very quickly becomes an 8-1 game, and then you're really out of reach. And then the team just chalks it up, and they're like, okay, let's move on to tomorrow.
I mean, he's been up and down. I don't think he's like Austin Bryce bad, but
I think he's slightly better than Austin Bryce.
Yeah. I feel the same way. I'm like, oh my God, you know, Rios is coming in, but then that ends up being the game. He ends up being all right. And then,
I mean, I mentioned in the last episode, it's like a seesaw.
The next game,
you want to get rid of him.
The next game ends up being maddening because, you know, like today he gives up one or two runs. But I think the reason that he's stuck around as long as he has is because he can go multiple innings. So we'll see.
Go multiple innings, but so can Martin Perez. Well, and so can Garrett Richards.
That's what I was getting at. So we'll see what Cora's trust level is with those two guys. I personally like Richards better than Martinez in the pen. Martinez can go out there and just not have it immediately. And then he's pitching like Rios. Your volume. No.
Sorry about that. I accidentally hit the mute button. Okay. So to me, I look at it and say Martin Perez can instantly take you out of the ballgame. Right?
Yeah, he could.
But he can also go out there and give you six outs without burning the bullpen. He's still competitive. Yaxel Rios, every time he comes in, four outs, and then he gets shelled a little bit, and then Cora has to come get him. You have to empty the rest of the bullpen. Like, if you're going to get shelled, you might as well put somebody in like Martin Perez, who can give you three innings. If you're going to be down 8-1, like, why are the other guys pitching?
You know, so he sucked, but did Brandon Workman make a ridiculously stupid decision to refuse the option to Worcester?
Yes, because he'd be back on this
club. You know what I mean? I mean, he was horrible. He was really bad. I mean, his whip was like close to 3, I want to say.
Well, he got bad all at once. Like 3 or 4 of his last starts was when he really lost
He was walking the tightrope. But I think he actually might have a spot on this roster right now had he not elected free agency, because I don't understand why he did that. That was dumb.
And he hasn't...
Neither here nor there. No, he hasn't landed with anyone. Okay. It was just something I was thinking about, like, just thinking of the guys that we know. I mean, we have 3 bodies that will likely be gone. You know, it's just we need some guys to get healthy. That's what it comes down to. It sucks, but we need these guys to get healthy. We need them to get healthy fast. I think Brazier's getting healthy fast. I think...
Darwin's in.
He needs to get back. I haven't heard anything about him, though.
Let's talk about Tanner Houck while we still have a little bit.
Yeah.
We've had some private conversations in the war room, and we kind of have different mindsets on him. Oh, Andrew, why don't you go ahead?
They're all positive. Well, I love Tanner Houck. It's great that we managed to develop an arm every 15 years. It's fantastic. And hey, finally, it's like Haley's Comet. We get a pitcher. And Houck, I think, is a great pitcher. I think he's immensely talented. I don't think he can go through a lineup three times. Guys get a great view on him. And it is what it is. He's got a role at a major league high leverage situation. I don't know if they have to piggyback him with someone else. I think if he's on a different organization, maybe we see a starter that goes two. Like, think of what Tampa could have done with, what was it, Rasputin or whatever his name was on Thursday. Imagine him going four. Yeah, him going four, and then you put Houck in. Or him going three, and then you put Houck in for five, and then you put your closer in. Shutdown game. I just don't see a situation where Tanner Houck is a sixth-inning pitcher. And
develop a third pitch. That's how it
happens. Well, yeah, but is he going to? That splitter was very ineffective today.
Well,
he couldn't throw a first strike. It was high and outside every time.
Develop it this season. But going into next season, if he develops a third pitch...
Well, that'd be phenomenal. I'm all for it.
With Garrett Whitlock and borrows that changeup. Well, then there's
Matt Andrews. Matt Andrews is going to be the
next pitching coach for the Red Sox. Andrews.
Him and Davey Bush just co-pitching coaches. But no, let me throw my theory really quick. I'm going to be really fast.
Go for this.
Tanner Houck would make a great closer, and he could give you.
I don't want that. Go ahead.
But if he can't be a starter, why not put him in the second most important pitching role? A guy that can potentially go eighth and ninth inning, whenever you need him to go. That's a weapon. And ideal world develops a third pitch. I'd love to see him as your number four starter. I just don't see him being able to go three times through a
major league lineup. I think that's a waste. That's a waste of his talent.
He can give
you four innings of
what about Papelbon?
Shutdown pitching.
Well, that was the same thing with Papelbon. Couldn't get through the lineup a third time. So they're like, screw it.
So let's take Thursday's experiment, right? Thursday's start as our – this is what Tanner Houck is going to be, right? The third time through the lineup, did you think he had a bad – like, did you think they were really all over him? Because I was sitting there on the third baseline.
Yes.
And the only at bat where I was like, why is he out there?
Wander Franco?
Because
he couldn't even get a ball by him. But the guy before him, too, was ripping, foul balls down the first baseline. And then
two foul balls on the third baseline and fought some pitches off. But
the deception's
everyone
gone.
Everyone in the ball. Yeah, of course it is. But that's also the most lefty lineup in the big leagues, lefty heavy lineup he's ever gonna face. Everybody in that lineup today except one, Nelson
they
Cruz,
set him up for that. They set him up for that, though. That's what Tampa does, and that
no
sucks.
Doubt. And then you notice when he comes out of the game, Manuel Margot comes into the game, and some of these other big bats come into the game for the right-handed hitters. I think Tanner Houck could absolutely be the most dominant bullpen arm in baseball against right-handed pitching. But I also think you can get four innings from him. Slot him into the starter. Have him be the opener once every 3 days.
Is an opener better than having him being a season-long all-star closer, though?
I don't know if he can be an all-star closer against left-handed hitting. I don't. I would like to see it. But I also think, yes, it is. It is more beneficial to this team, the way that we're set up currently going forward, to have a starting pitcher than a bullpen arm.
Oh, I'm not saying for this season. I'm saying for his future. But how many teams can just all of a sudden pull, like, two or three left-handed batters off the bench?
Now, here's my thing. If you have Tanner Houck as your everyday eighth-inning guy or closer, is that better for his career? Probably. Is it better for the Red Sox? Probably not. That's where I look at it. Terry, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm a year away from making a move like that. for him being a closer. I'm not saying I won't ever get there, but...
Oh, no, no, no. Give him all the time. Give him all the time.
I've never seen a rookie pitcher come in and own the mound like he does and have all the confidence in the world that he does and not rattle. I really want to...
Agreed.
I want to be extremely thorough with this. The most splitters he had thrown before today was 4 in a game. He threw 8 today, and yeah, he mislocated some of them, but he also got 3 swings and misses. So I think there could be some progress there, and maybe the splitter doesn't end up being the pitch. Maybe they come up with something, and that's something that could happen this winter, for instance. But
that's how I look at it, Terry. I mean, he has absolute dominant control of 2 pitches. His fastball location is perfect. His slider has more movement on it than any slider I've ever seen from a righty.
And he's...
Like, I can't think of another guy with that slider.
When I talk about the confidence, too, though, he handled New York, which, I mean, Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, they're still scary to a rookie pitcher for the most part.
Absolutely. And he throws the ball so fast. He catches it and throws it. I'm picturing a future here, Andrew, with a 2-hour and 40-minute start for the Red Sox.
I'm not moving him out right now. I'm just saying, I think if it didn't happen, I am sky high on him. Absolutely sky high on him. I just, at this point, it's a liability third time through the order, and give him a full off season. And we do have to recognize he went down for 2 months. Like, injured. For 2 months.
That was a league-wide phenomenon, though.
It was. It was. Yeah. Andrew, would you guys consider... Now, this is interesting. We get to the postseason, which at this point is no guarantee. Would you consider slotting Garrett Whitlock to the opener spot?
No.
Or Tanner Houck to the opening spot and have Garrett Whitlock piggy off him? I think those two guys in a 1-2 punch... For 7 innings, you know, 4 and then 3, 4, 3 and then 4 could be the way you get through one game. I think that's one game of the postseason right there.
I think with the postseason will be hilarious because I think we've seen Cora say, I don't give a shit about these guys' arms. We're going to burn through them. And Whitlock, I think, is your 8th inning. I said this last week. I think Whitlock is your 8th inning guy. I really do.
I love it.
I wouldn't hate that either, but I mean, we're going to get looks at some of the pitchers we mentioned. Brazier, Darwin's in, I think, before that move does happen.
The real reason I say that is I don't want Whitlock as your 8th inning guy because he's the only guy who can give you multiple innings whose name isn't Robles or Davis or garbage. Like, insert piece
Garrett
of garbage.
Richards. Garrett Richards. Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen Richards in that role, but he should be able to find 2 pitches he's somewhat comfortable with.
Yeah, and the next couple weeks should show us how they want to use the bullpen full, come October.
And get 6 outs anyway. Yep. But so we'll wrap this one up with Andrew. What do you think the next month, 5 weeks will be with Connor Siebold?
You know, he's actually been more stretched out than Tanner has. And I don't know if they're going to bring him up, but I do want to see him get a spot start here or there. I've loved what that kid's shown. And what if he shows you flashes? Why can't that be your 2-inning guy over Martin Perez? You know what I mean? You know, September call up.
He's the next man up with an injury. He's the next guy up, though.
By attrition, absolutely. And you get to bring rosters, I think, are 27 or no, well, they're 26. 26. So you got to bring them up to 28 come September. So that's 2 free call-ups.
Both going to be pitchers.
Oh, they better both be pitchers. I mean,
who else would it be? Cordero again?
Right now I want Yairo Munoz in my outfield instead of Franchi Cordero.
That's
but
a
that's
nice
a whole
one.
Other...
That's another that
that's a spark plug,
like
man. I mean,
but
he's the hottest hitter in minor league baseball.
I want energy,
but and Siebold can give you that spark. Then
if he doesn't get the hit on the first pitch, he's getting out. His OBP is literally his average. He hasn't taken a walk. But I don't want to get sidetracked here, really quick. I think Connor Siebold gets the September call up. if it's not a Kevin McCarthy or a Brennan, and I think he could be a two-inning weapon that no, you know, no one has any tape familiarity, and it's depth for a Hauk that goes four or five, then you bridge the gap to your 18 bullpen.
Bring
not
him
saying
up
in the playoffs for now.
In the Tampa series, bring him up because they don't have the book on him. And
yeah,
sold. Bring him up.
Do it.
You just sold me on him, Andrew. I hope he's up next week.
We'll be that quick. September.
But yeah, yeah. Well, all right. We'll call it for this episode for the listening audience. Again, we will be back on Sunday night to record the outcome of the Orioles series and probably a lot of Chris Sale talk as well. Have a good weekend. Take care.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply, in-app only.